Live from our nation's capital.
This budget thing is going to do nothing. Space Force, I still think it's interesting. President Trump not playing his cards yet. Headlines, policy, and politics colliding.
Bloomberg, sound off. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
I would rather see a congressional solution. It's part of my DNA.
The Senate map in 2020 looks a lot different than it looked in 2018.
President Trump was sent here to smash conventional norms.
In a sense, Bernie Sanders has already won.
This is Bloomberg, sound on with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
Viva Las Vegas. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio, and we are awaiting the start of the Democratic presidential debate here in Vegas. We've got complete coverage with a team of all-stars, and we're going to do a complete preview, policy and politics colliding, clashing. In Vegas, there's a new guy on the stage, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and he's going to clash with Bernie Sanders. But don't count out Klobuchar, Buttigieg, or former Vice President Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren. What do they have to gain from tonight's debate? Plus, the Fed minutes signal policy on hold for now, and China plans to take over a virus-hit town. So the latest on the coronavirus as well. So a lot to get through here in Vegas. I got to be completely transparent and honest right now. I almost got lost on the way to the Democratic spin room because all of the slot machines in the lobby of Bally's, wherever we are, casino. And it's like dizzying. And Al Motter's here, Democratic strategist, partner at Brownstein, Hyatt, Farber, and Schreck. Al, did you get lost in the slots, or were you playing the slots?
I was neither playing nor did I get lost.
All right. So you're
straight back here.
Once again, Al's five steps ahead of me. Amy Tarkanian.
Yes, sir.
Republican strategist, former chairwoman of the Nevada Republican Party. First time on the program.
Yes, thank you for
so
having me.
So do you know all of the layout of the strip and everything?
I don't, and I will go ahead and confess that I, too, got lost.
Well, yes. I don't gamble.
And I've been here for 18 years.
All right, so it's not just
I don't gamble
me.
Either, so that's why.
All right, well, let's dive right into it. Here we are, just a few short hours away from the start of the Democratic presidential debate. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is going to be on the stage. He, of course, is the founder and majority owner of Bloomberg LP. Which owns Bloomberg Radio. And I'm hearing from Senator Bernie Sanders' campaign that they're saying bring it on, Amy. What do you predict tonight's going to happen?
It's going to be very interesting because I think if you actually look at the breakdown here for the caucus attendees, I have spoken with a number of them, and the grassroots aspect are really in favor of Bernie Sanders. If you remember last time what happened out here, it was very chaotic. There were fraud allegations. There were threats of people being arrested. It was
Troy Price is saying, see, it's not just me.
No, it was bad. and so I think they're out for vengeance. That's for sure. In order for Mr. Bloomberg to make a dent out here, I think it's going to be extremely difficult. I know a number of Democrats who are not happy with the way that he's chosen to campaign through purchasing and without doing any grassroots at all.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, tonight's the first chance for all of them who are chomping at the bit to go after him. He's trying to buy an election. They want to compete for an election, and they're looking forward to competing with him. As for Senator Sanders, I mean, he has immense strength here. You can see it in the polling. It's a very unionized state. The culinary workers notably did not endorse.
Yeah, they didn't endorse.
And that is,
they didn't
that is,
endorse. However, did you notice that they only mentioned one candidate as their friend, and that was Biden?
Yeah, and I think the vice president was really looking for that endorsement to propel him back into the conversation. Without him getting it, it's going to be tough for him.
And I will tell you that pictures were sent to me privately last night that Biden was actually shaking hands in the break room of the Aria, which is owned by MGM. So that is
he was
quite
in the basement down there meeting workers. I was there, not down in the basement, but he was there. Yeah.
Well, see, what I find interesting, and both of you know this, is that we live in this populist era where a lot of politicians speak in a populist rhetorical approach, but the union workers oftentimes have a different. You know, the employee might have a different opinion than the boss. And you're seeing that in the union workers play out in real time.
Absolutely. I mean, the problem Bernie has with the union may not be, as you're pointing out, any problem with the individual voters.
Yeah, it's the bosses.
Right. You know, his plan, Medicare for All, is not popular with the union because they provide
the
health
Cadillac
insurance
tax.
For 60,000 Nevadans.
Right. They don't want that removed.
And it's such a good plan, I'll note. And we do a lot of work out here, our firm. A lot of the casinos have put their plan, they just let the union provide it, not the individual companies. So it's that good. And so, of course, the union doesn't want Medicare for All because it would rip that away.
But you know, what's interesting is another union out here, the teachers union, they are in favor of Bernie Sanders.
Now, why is that? Why do you think that they've gone for Sanders?
You know, that's another significant loss. I actually don't have that answer. Yeah. And there are a number of parents that are actually quite concerned about the leadership in their children's school actually going that far to the left.
One more point on Bloomberg's addition into the race is that traditionally, when there's a front runner, they become the target of the rest of the field. There's no question Bernie Sanders is the front runner in this race. A Morning Consult poll that came out earlier today found him as the top Democrat amongst likely Democratic voters who was the most electable of all the 2020 candidates in the 2020 field. Do you think, Al, that with the addition of Bloomberg on the stage, that it's going to shield Bernie Sanders from getting the brunt of so many of the taxes? You said all the other candidates, including Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, Buttigieg, and who am I forgetting?
Vice President.
And former Vice President Biden have been all signaling that they want to take him on.
It could have that impact, but it could also have a different impact, which is the two of them going head-to-head and seeing that battle for the first time. And how that they manage that will have a big say in what people think about both of them. It does help him, I think, though, in Nevada, because if people are going after the mayor and not him, that lets him coast into victory.
Tough question. Nevada or Nevada?
It's not tough, and it's Nevada.
Nevada. Okay. Got it. I've said it.
We will tar and feather
you. I've said it both ways, like, all week.
And it's Nevada. Just like it's Tarkanian,
just like it's a hoagie and
yes,
not a
there
sub.
You go.
Okay, I got it. Nevada. Okay, so we talked about Bloomberg. We talked about Bernie. But former Vice President Joe Biden, Amy, I think he could have a solid night tonight trying to lay the groundwork of a political comeback of sorts, especially if Sanders and Bloomberg go at it.
I do agree with that. The reason being is because he has pretty much the entire Nevada state delegation, which is predominantly Democratic, he has their support. Mm-hmm. So you see a lot of the establishment out here in the state of Nevada already backing him. I think that's going to help him with his ego, help him with his energy, maybe give him that little extra bit of boost as he's entering to the stage, seeing an audience filled with people who love him, want him to do well. I think he might pull it off tonight.
And, you know, he's got a lot of support, not just in the Democratic electeds, but in the state. I mean, Helen Mirren, whose husband runs MGM, is his national finance chair.
The actress.
No. Jim Mirren. He's talking about
kidding.
Jim Mirren's wife.
She's his national finance chair. She's in Nevada. She's a big presence here. He has a lot of support out here, and I think, you know, Americans love comeback stories, and it's a chance for him tonight to do that.
But I do find it interesting, though, that a number of those last minute, I'd say, and when I mean last minute, within this last week, those Democratic officials who have jumped on board with Biden, I think it's actually been more of in fear of the Sanders overcoming Biden, because they didn't jump on board from the very beginning.
It really is remarkable, and I was talking with some of my colleagues on Bloomberg Television about this all day, just in being out here and talking to folks and talking to various folks connected to the various campaigns. There's this baked-in sense of volatility, of unpredictability, and I don't really see any impetus on either of the campaigns to drop out of this race before Super Tuesday, just because there just seems that there could be so much that could happen. I'm struck because this caucus on Saturday is a much more diverse electorate, but it's also, I think, the issues pertaining to unions. It's a more unionized state than Iowa or New Hampshire. And I'm not knocking Iowa or New Hampshire. Anyone who listens to the program, I do believe Iowa and New Hampshire matter. It's why Biden has taken such a significant hit. All right, coming up, we're going to talk much more policy and politics. Plus, the central bank weighs in on policy. We'll dive into that as well with our all-star panel. You can download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes by downloading the Bloomberg Business app, or you can find us on iHeartRadio, iTunes, and Spotify. My name is Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio. And I'm here in Las Vegas, and I promise, I'm not playing the slots, because I don't even get how they do it. You, like, wait for the things to line up. I don't get it. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
They're trying to figure out all kinds of ways how do we stop Bernie and the movement, but they are not going to succeed.
That was Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent senator from Vermont who caucuses with the Democrats, speaking about himself and the election. My name is Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio. I am broadcasting live from Las Vegas inside of Bally's, where the NBC News and MSNBC Democratic debate is going to be tonight. I am joined by two political all-stars. Al Motter's here. He's a Democratic strategist, partner at Brownstein, Hyatt, Farber, and Schreck, and the Amy Tarkanian. She is a Republican strategist, former chairwoman of the Nevada Republican
there
Party. By the end of the show,
you're getting there.
I'm getting there. It's like water and water in Philly. I got to, like, you know, realign wherever I am.
At least you caught yourself.
At least I caught myself. All right, so we were talking earlier about the Democratic presidential debate. I feel like we haven't spent enough time talking about former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg. And he arguably won Iowa. Strong showing, second place in New Hampshire. And nobody's talking about him. What's he got to do tonight, Al?
You know, he has been a bit forgotten. I think you're right. And if you look at the national polls that have just come out, there's now data to back that up. He's, you know, under 10% in all the national polls. In South Carolina, he trails Tom Steyer by like 12 points, which is quite stunning.
Wow.
So I'm not sure what's going on there. You know, you would have thought someone with the momentum that he should have generated out of Iowa, New Hampshire, would have been doing better. But I'll tell you this. If he's a casualty, he will be the biggest casualty of the Iowa caucus debacle, because that should have been his night.
Wow.
Well, right after that took place here in Nevada, he actually doubled the amount of his campaign staff. So I think that he was hoping to come right into Nevada swinging, and that just, I haven't felt it, I haven't heard it. I think that the poll that you just mentioned is a pretty accurate reflection. I hear more about Sanders, Biden, Warren, and, you know, Tom Steyer. He's been here for quite some time, and he pretty much has his mug on every billboard throughout our entire state. And
I was,
he's been
on
all
my
over
run
the
today,
TV ads.
And I saw so many Tom Steyer.
Yes.
I saw more Tom Steyer than any other.
So
let me just tell
Tom
you, in
Steyer,
Gardnerville.
That's where I ran, I think.
No, no. Gardnerville is actually about 25 minutes outside of South Lake Tahoe.
Okay,
there are
no
two billboards.
Idea. I was
and,
not
he's,
there.
and he has his face on those. There's only
really
two in town, and he has
he's
those.
Everywhere.
Yeah, he's everywhere.
So the one thing I'll say is that's true, but he spent $19 million in New Hampshire, and he got 3% of the
it's
vote.
So much money. I can't even – I don't think – what do I know? But
you
it's
know
a lot.
Lot
of money. Well, it's a lot of money. Former Vice President Joe Biden, he was asked, I believe – earlier today about former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg getting into the race. And he was asked this in a gaggle with reporters. Take a listen to what Biden had to say. Here he is.
Truth is, he's basically been a Republican his whole life. The fact of the matter is, he didn't endorse Barack or me when we ran. This is a guy talking about, you know, he's using Barack's pictures like, you know, they're good buddies. I'm going to talk about his record.
I like that quote from the vice president. He's absolutely right. Bloomberg's been running ads left and right, basically making it look like he and President Obama are best friends, and the president is a supporter of his, and it ain't true. And you know, when Joe Biden is at his best is when he gets his back up and he's a fighter. And he sounded like a fighter in that quote, and that I look for more of that tonight.
I would actually have to agree with everything that you just said.
Al's doing a dance
yeah.
in Vegas. Al
but
brought his
no
dancing shoes in Vegas. Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, it's a purple state. It's bipartisan
yeah, that's
agreement.
That's right. I agree with that statement. And quite honestly, I don't think he would actually want to tout his endorsement or even a past endorsement of somebody who is now being accused of being a hypocrite on so many levels and in so many issues. I think that Mr. Bloomberg is not going to do very well here after tonight's
showing.
Well,
he hasn't campaigned here.
No, he has not. And that's...
And he's not on the ballot here.
No. Nope. No one can even vote for him on Saturday here.
Just as a disclaimer, Michael Bloomberg, who's seeking the Democratic presidential nomination, is the founder and majority owner of Bloomberg LP, the parent company of Bloomberg Radio. I'm curious. The only real, as in my professional career, that I can compare this to is the 2016 cycle, when there was a wide... I was embedded with the Trump campaign. And so there was a wide open... field.
There were 17.
17?
Yeah, it was crazy.
One of the differences, and I think there are similarities to the Sanders campaign as well as the Trump campaign, just in terms of their strategic approach and having an enthusiastic group of supporters. But one of the differences is that Trump kept winning.
Right.
And so I think, Amy, from your perspective as someone, as a Republican, if Sanders keeps winning, I mean, to the average voter, a win is a win, and not delegates, it's votes.
Right, and I'm going to tell you, in this environment, you could have your nominee be Bernie Sanders. And the reason I say that is when I go around asking Nevadans if they've participated in the caucus and what their thoughts are on how the whole process went down and why they chose who they chose, they are very conflicted. There's not a firm choice in somebody who reflects their morals or values necessarily. It's more of who do they think that they're going to be able to back that can take down Trump, pretty much. They're willing to swallow their thought process on which way they think that the country
but
should
see,
go.
See, you know, I agree with that, but Al, let me ask a follow-up, because when I talk to Bernie supporters, though, they feel that it's their guy or bust.
Well, that was certainly the case with them in 2016,
right,
and we're seeing it again now, and I think they are the one exception to the rule that Amy just described, which I agree with. For most Democrats, that's the case. That's why they're willing to consider, as the vice president said, a former Republican who's now beset with all sorts of controversies over how he handled women being treated in his workforce, and they're willing to consider him. But Bernie's folks are different. But what's the same is that he's winning, as you say. And if he wins here Saturday, he'll have essentially won or placed tied for winning in the first three states, and he'll head to South Carolina with a whole lot of steam.
I have a better comparison, not between the Trump supporters and the Sanders supporters, but more of, if you remember, Senator Rand Paul's father,
yes.
Ron Paul.
Yes, that is a much
better. I would say
better.
Those are more similar in their passion for their candidate.
Correct, yeah, and... Did Ron win any states? Ron, like I know the guy. Did Ron Paul win any?
No, I don't.
Craig
I don't
Gordon
remember.
Is the Bloomberg Washington bureau.
He did fairly well here because we do have a libertarian
right.
streak.
Yeah. But he always tells me, why do you always refer to people by their first name? And I can't help it. I can't help it. All right, coming up, much more policy and politics with the panel. We're going to dive into the Fed as well. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio, broadcasting live from inside of the Democratic Debate Presidential Spin Room floor in Viva Las Vegas. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio, and I'm in Las Vegas today, folks. And we're covering the Democratic presidential debate. I'm joined by two all-stars, Amy Tarkanian. She is Republican strategist, former chairwoman of the Nevada Republican Party. Are you having fun, Amy?
I am, and actually you're making it fun.
Thank you. Yeah. Would you come back on the show?
I would in a heartbeat.
And you're going to be in New York next week.
Next week.
With Bloomberg Television, right?
That is correct.
Cool.
With David Westin.
The David Westin. And Al Motter's here, Democratic strategist, partner at Brownstein, Hyatt, Farber, and Schreck. Are you still having fun?
I am having a great
time. All right. Well, that's all. That's all. You know, I like to have fun. That's what I tell my bosses all the time. I'm like, let's just all have fun. Life's
just
more,
very joyful.
You know, if you're listening. So there was some economy news today. Craig Torres writing on the terminal. Fed officials saw policy appropriate for a time amid risks. Federal Reserve officials viewed their current monetary policy as appropriate, quote unquote, for a time, while they remained on guard against domestic and global risks that could slow down the longest U.S. expansion on record. And it's the last part of Craig's lead, Amy, that I'm sure you love. The longest U.S. expansion on record. Now, there are some potential question marks and volatility as it relates to the coronavirus and China, as well as some, you know, trade developments with the Europeans.
Right.
But it doesn't seem as of now that there's much chatter of the dreaded R-word recession, at least on the horizon. And from as you factor that into your political forecast, it means what?
It means that the Democrats will have an incredibly difficult uphill battle when it comes time to their nominee having to come up with a better message on why they should vote for their nominee as opposed to President Trump under this booming economy. I mean, a lot of these other areas that you just mentioned, dealing with the coronavirus, these were unplanned. These were, basically things that are uncontrollable. And so the president has done a tremendous job with, lowering the unemployment rate, increasing wage growth. And I think it's been phenomenal.
So here's the thing. The president's right to
That's what I'm sorry, just to interrupt you. Here's the thing.
The president
says as he lays
dun,
down
dun, dun.
As he puts his chips on the table at a blackjack booth here at Bally's. I'm kidding, we're not gambling. Go ahead.
Well, we might later. But the thing is this, that unemployment came down faster under Obama than it did under Trump. Wage growth was faster under Obama than it is under Trump. The number of jobs added in the last 3 years of the Obama administration eclipsed the number of jobs added in the first 3 years of the Trump administration. The point of that is Democrats need to stand up and be proud of the record of President Obama in his 8 years of recovery and argue that they have the better path forward.
But it's just a weird, for lack of a better word, a weird debate to have that, you know, if you're a Democrat, my president had a better economy than, and if you're a Republican, you know, no, my president has a, you know, it's, the economy's doing good.
Right, because technically, though, under the Obama administration, even though that there were some improvements.
There was nowhere to go but up in 2008.
Well, yes, let's be fair there. But it was also the slowest recovery since the Great Depression. So that was quite a struggle.
Well, it's slower now than it was in the last 3 years.
See, I look at it not through the lens of cable news, but through the lens of Delco, or through the lens of where I grew up, or the lens of southwestern Pennsylvania, or in Youngstown, Ohio, and the 70,000 voters that we always talk about on this program who voted for President Obama and then voted for President Trump, and those swing voters that Selena Zito has, you know, our my friend Selena Zito has reported on and traversed the country writing about. I mean, for them, I think those are going to be the decision makers, and in terms of where the economy is doing.
Well, you've heard that the president now coined the phrase "it's a
blue collar
boom."
Yeah.
Yes, and those Rust Belt states are going to be key, and they are actually feeling the improvement in their pocketbook. So I think their voices are going to be incredibly important in this next election.
He's better at messaging this than we are right now, and we have to improve on that if
Who's
we hope
he?
To win. The president.
Oh, okay.
And Democrats.
Wait, we
Democrats have to improve on that if we hope to win.
Al, that's fascinating because you know when I was in New Hampshire and I went. And saw, sorry, I'm Italian. They just both looked. If you're in your car, I talk with my hands.
Shiny object syndrome.
Don't we all in the media? So yeah. I just was pointing and talking with my hands, and Al and Amy just looked, and I'm like, no, you guys, I'm talking. But when I saw Senator Amy Klobuchar speak in New Hampshire, her tone and how she talks about the economy is similar to Joe Biden, but those, with the exception of those two, I'm struck. Who do you think can match how the president is talking about the economy?
Well, I agree that those two are the best at it. It remains to be seen.
I didn't say best. I said they talk in a different way because I don't have a dog in the fight.
Well, I think that they're good at it because they connect to actual people's lives and they tell
right.
stories about the economy and about people and families.
And she comes from it.
And she comes from it from her upbringing from the Iron Range of Minnesota. And it's authentic. People
yeah,
want
is.
Authentic politicians. You don't have to like the president, but he's authentic.
And you also don't have to like the candidates. but I agree with you on that. And when I have been asked if I had to, if right now I had to, as a Republican, who would I choose on the Democratic side? Just from the debates that I've heard so far, I would say Senator Klobuchar. And that being because she does have a record. I don't necessarily agree with it, but it does show that she has a history of actually being able to move things forward in a productive way.
Just
well,
to bring
it's interesting, just real quick,
yeah.
You know the show The Circus on Showtime and Mark McKinnon, I was in Iowa when I talked to him briefly about it, and he said that he thought she'd be the single best candidate to go up against Trump, to your point.
Well,
oh, interesting.
I think she's going to be a dark horse if I were to play predictor tonight. I think she could have
Well, she's virtually had no presence here in Nevada up until this last week. And then she just came up with her first Spanish and English ads.
Well, just to bring it back to the meeting minutes and to the economy where we started the segments, I just want to read this portion from the January 28th, 29th Federal Open Market Committee meeting. That the minutes that were really the minutes. We in Wonk World, I call it, in like Central Bank World, we the minutes that were released. Quote, participants discussed how maintaining the current policy stance for a time could be helpful in supporting U.S. economic activity and employment in the face of global developments that have been weighing on spending decisions. And the reason I highlight that is because, again, the volatility and the risk, according to the central bank and Fed Chair Jay Powell, is not necessarily coming from domestic issues, but coming from global issues as it relates to China and the United States' position in negotiating trade deals with various entities in not just Europe, not just Asia, but also Latin America, even though we're in the post-USMCA world. But to bring it back to that front, one of the things that I have been, I was talking about this yesterday, and Amy, I would love to get your perspective on this. I have been baffled that there hasn't been so much of a economic debate, a rigorous economic debate between the Democratic candidates, especially when it comes to trade policy, because as a nerd, when you look at the records of these candidates, that's really where I notice the most differences between them.
Right. And then if you also take a look at Wall Street, you take a look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, that hit record highs over 100 times, which that's hard to argue with. You have the S&P 500, NASDAQ, which have repeatedly, you know, also broken record highs. How do you argue with that? How do you compete with optional ideas? Why would you want optional ideas if we're doing so well?
It's difficult to win an election that's not about change, and I'm not sure that this election is about change. In other words,
really?
It's tough to disrupt the take the incumbent out when the economy's going well,
right,
and people aren't clamoring for change. What's interesting about Senator Sanders' rise, however, is it suggests that at least on the Democratic side, they want big structural change in a manner in which we've never seen in this country.
Which is actually terrifying. I agree with everything that you said for the most part, except for I do believe that it has to do with change. And I think it's change not in baby steps like you mentioned, it's change overall. This is an overhaul of what these Sanders supporters are looking for, come to hell or high water. And I think that's where a lot of your soft Republicans and soft Democrats and everyone in between who maybe still aren't so thrilled with the idea of a President Trump, maybe due to his personality or whether if it's policies, whatever it may be, I think that Senator Sanders overall is going to be a very tough one to swallow.
It's fascinating. I mean, I remember growing up just being a political junkie, skipping class and seeing John McCain and Sarah Palin campaign, then Obama, and, you know, and just watching it. I tell you something.
He's really young, isn't he?
There's nothing more exciting. My parents let me be
there
ungrounded.
There were some others before them.
Who? I'm just kidding.
Amy and I remember them.
Coming up, we're going to talk more. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio, broadcasting live from Las Vegas. And I'm joined by Amy Tarkanian, Republican strategist, former chairwoman of the Nevada Republican Party. Things I've learned today. It's Nevada, I won't even say it because then I'll say it again. And Al Motter, Democratic strategist as well. Tell me a fast fact about Las Vegas, Amy, and the history of Las Vegas and the Strip that most people don't know. I'm putting you on the spot.
Most people don't know?
Yeah.
Gosh, there's so many. I will just go ahead and stick with a family member of mine.
Okay.
Now, most men who love sports would know my last name, but not the younger generation necessarily, and not all women who don't follow sports. My father-in-law was Coach Jerry Tarkanian, who is in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
Sick.
Right?
That's very cool.
Yes.
Tell me something about the Rat Pack.
The Rat Pack? I will tell you that
I'm a Sinatra guy.
Okay, well, good, because that's what I was going to share.
Because he's the
when
OG.
When my father-in-law was coaching at the height of his career, leading into the NCAA championship
yes.
in 1990.
I love this already, Al.
They had what was called Gucci Row, which was the who's who of Las
Gucci
Vegas.
Gucci Row.
Was able to sit, and it was virtually impossible to get a seat in Gucci Row.
Do they all have to wear Gucci on the seat? Is that why it's called
no,
Gucci?
No, it was the wealthy, it was the elite,
wow.
It was the who's who. You couldn't get a ticket into the game. It was the best show in town.
Wow.
And Frank Sinatra actually called my mother-in-law asking for a favor to get tickets to one of the games.
And I hope the mother-in-law said, what do you need, Frank?
And my mother-in-law, who was also the Las Vegas mayor pro tem and now termed out, she obliged.
Anything for Sinatra.
Right.
You know, Sinatra got arrested when he was 22 years old. And I don't think I can tell the story on air, so I'm going to dip out of it, but Google it. It's on there. He's a Jersey guy.
Yes.
Sinatra. There's
a lot of interesting mob stories here on how Las Vegas became
so
Vegas.
I'm
we have a mob museum that you
well,
go
so
check out.
I am getting way off on a tangent, and Al's looking at his clock saying, Kevin, get back on track. And I can see Christine Barada back in Washington, D.C., our executive producer, saying, Kevin, I told you not to get off on these non-political policy tangents. But my parents were out here on a trip a couple months ago, and they went to the mob museum, and they said it was I'm going to use the word dope. They said it was very exciting.
Okay, I've been there. It's terrific.
Is it? I hear it's amazing. I want to go. Do we have time?
You can tell your parents that you know who I actually became friends with last night at a UNLV basketball game?
Who?
Is a grandson of a former mobster with the last name of Lansky. Google it.
And with that as a pivot, Al, I'm going to let you go first so that Amy can observe. We do this thing called What's Your Quick Take on Your Radar. Tell me one thing I don't know that isn't getting enough. And you were telling me in the break about you think there's going to be some type of exciting convention.
I think for the first time in 50-some years, we're going to have what's called a contested convention. The entrance of Mike Bloomberg into the race and all of his money means, with all these other well-heeled candidates, that they are four, five, or six of them are going to continue for a little while here, divvying up the delegates. And that means no one's going to have the majority of the delegates by the time we get to Milwaukee. And that's going to create quite a hullabaloo, Kevin, because no one has ever dealt with that situation in the modern era, and we really don't know what's going
to
happen.
So when you talk to your friends at the DNC, when you talk to the DNC world, how are they feeling about this?
They feel pretty calm about it, actually. They believe that what will end up happening is whoever ends up having the most delegates will emerge as the nominee. But there are people in the Democratic Party, here's a hypothetical, Bernie gets 38% of the delegates, Bloomberg, Biden, Buttigieg and Klobuchar have 62% of the other delegates. So if you pick the guy with 38%, even though he has the most of the plurality, you're rejecting the 62% of the voters. How does that go down?
What do you weigh in on this, Amy?
You just told me to observe.
Well, but in terms of this contested, the only thing that I can compare this to is last cycle when everybody said that there was going to be a brokered convention. And it never happened.
Well, the difference, I
think it's a pundit pipe dream. That's what I think.
It's not a pipe dream because the rules require people to vote.
But do you think...
So in other words, that there's, it's not going to necessarily be contentious. I'm just saying it's
an interesting
nuance. You asked how the DNC feels about it. They think it's going to go okay because people will coalesce around the person with the most delegates. I'm not as sure that that's the case.
Okay.
As a Republican,
go ahead.
I would love
to
happen. I would go in and get my popcorn and sit in my lazy boy. And
you can't see her, but she has the biggest smile she's had for this entire show right now.
That would make for some very exciting television.
I don't play Mr. Predictor. I'm still not bullish on... I think what you said about there being a potentially contested convention that's not contentious is more likely, based upon my reporting, than there being a contested all-out fight. Because I think that the
I did
Democrats,
talk to one official last night who told me he thought it could go to like 10 ballots.
Oh.
Wow.
Hanging
chats. I don't have enough popcorn to stay up that late.
I don't have enough caffeine to cover it. Amy, what's your quick take on your radar? One thing.
Another thing besides Las Vegas?
But tell me something in the political world. It can be something as it relates to, you were talking prior to the show about all the down ballot races here in Nevada. Just tell us something.
Okay, so McCain actually lost our state by 12. Romney lost our state by 8. President Trump made up some pretty good ground and lost by around 2%. So we are a very purple state, heavily leaning blue.
What do you attribute that to?
To the fact that
Trump was
able
to close the gap compared to Romney and McCain.
Now I know that Al here is going to disagree with this statement,
okay.
but I do believe it was because we were needing somebody who was going to step up and fight. The Republican Party, I think, has been spineless for a very long time. We finally had somebody who was a fighter. In President Trump, and somebody who actually exuded common sense, someone who made a lot of promises and so far has been able to fulfill them, And I think, quite honestly, it was somebody who was more relatable and not so polished.
Yeah. Okay. Al?
I think that President Obama had an unusual ability to bring voters out that no other Democratic candidate has before or since. And that was the difference.
Yeah.
The elections that we just talked about, 08, 12, and 16, were two of them were his.
All right. I think that's great. So here's what's on my radar. Maggie Haberman and Julian E. Barnes scooping in the New York Times. We're going to read right from there. President Trump was expected to name Richard Grenell, the American ambassador to Germany, to be the acting director of national intelligence. Two people familiar with the matter said on Wednesday. Mr. Grenell, whose outspokenness throughout his career as a political operative and then as the ambassador has prompted criticism, as a vocal Trump loyalist who will lead a group of national security agencies often viewed skeptically by the White House. He's going to take over, of course, from Joe McGuire, who has served as the acting director of DNI since the resignation last summer of Dan Coats. Grenell, who's been based upon my reporting, I can tell you, very well liked by how he's handled German Chancellor Angela Merkel, as well as China, because the Chinese have obviously been trying to make inroads into Germany. And this is fascinating. Grinnell's coming back to Washington. Do you want to wait? Go ahead.
I have actually had the pleasure to meet him once, and he was very kind. He's incredibly sharp. He is nothing but professional. I like his demeanor. I like the way that he handles whatever is given to him, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And he's been able to help and be very vocal, too, with the LGBTQ
worldwide.
Not just in his own position or even just here in America. He's been very vocal in a lot of ways, in a very, very positive fashion.
Absolutely. And beyond that, I just want to note that according to Maggie's report, the White House did not respond to this report. It literally broke within the last, 10 minutes. And the White House has not confirmed this yet. All right. That's it for me. We're going to have complete coverage of the debate. Thank you, Amy. Thank you to Al. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio. And thanks for listening. Check back with us throughout the day for continuing exclusive insight and analysis on Bloomberg 99.1.